Welcome back to Healthy Conversations. You're in for a treat on this episode. It's slightly different from everything else I've done. I actually have three guests this week from TH Med and MediStar. So I've got Stephen, Dennis, and John. Their bios can be found in the show notes. We get into all things physician recruitment, burnout, staffing, and general healthcare trends. I think you're going to enjoy this episode. If you did enjoy it, feel free to copy the link and share it with a friend. Enjoy. Thanks.
Matt McGee is an employee of Frost Insurance. All opinions shared by Matt or guests of the Healthy Conversations podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Frost Insurance or Frost Bank. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for insurance, banking, or investment advice. Healthy Conversations with Matt McGee is brought to you by Straight Up Podcasts.
All right. Thank you guys for coming on. We have Stephen, Dennis, and John from MediStar on the call today. Thank you guys for coming on.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, let's get started with telling us a little bit about MediStar, what you guys are doing, and then we'll take it from there.
Certainly. Hi, this is Dennis Webb. I'm a VP of Business Development for MediStar. We are a staffing agency. We base all of our staffing on locum tenens. We are a part of the TH Med company. We were founded back in 2009 and 2010. We've been doing this for 10 years now. We operate from a locum tenens, but we also have companies that deal with permanent search as well as allied staffing and executive searches. And we've been really focusing in on the staffing shortages that are coming our way and been dealing with a lot of primary care issues.
I mean, you mentioned a lot there. Let's start with kind of what exactly is locum tenens. We can start there and then we can go into more the physician shortage.
Certainly. Locum tenens is Latin. It's a temporary placement for a physician while there might be gaps in scheduling at, say, a clinic or a hospital. It's a temporary fill while they either are looking for permanent solutions or just helping out a vacationing physician.
I mean, from their perspective, what is so appealing to this model? Like, is there a certain group of doctors that are predominantly doing it? Is it the, call it 60 plus that has retired from owning their own clinic and wants to work a little bit? Who is typically doing these locum temporary placement jobs?
Yeah, certainly. You know, we're seeing both ends of the spectrum there, Matt. It's both a retiring physician that wants to do some travel, maybe even an older physician that wants to get out of the all of the paperwork and reimbursements that are currently happening, and these electronic medical records that to get reimbursed for all of these procedures that are being done. It's just there's a lot to it. And with that, their physicians are looking more towards how they can get out of that, how they can be more temporary, doing 2 to 3 days versus a full 40 to 60 hours a week. So on that spectrum, we have those older doctors, but then we have the new residents that are out that are looking to figure out where they're going to spend the next part of their career. And they might be visiting different parts of the country, even trying out different avenues of specialties where they're getting into more clinics, maybe even a rural setting. But typically, it's more of urban settings that we're seeing them getting placed at.
Okay, that makes sense. To take a little step back, can you provide some insight into why these health systems do this model and don't just hire the physicians themselves? I think providing some context and from a higher level of how the health systems work from a staffing perspective would be very beneficial.
Certainly. Yes. A lot of the times, let's back up here a little bit. A lot of the times people don't budget, healthcare systems don't budget for locum tenens. And some of the times you're going to find that these are urgent and immediate needs where they have a sick provider or there's a medical leave. There's also times where they are looking for vacation time where it might come up, or even like a continuing medical education where they might need a temporary fill for a doctor. So a lot of the times they're looking and currently recruiting for permanent needs, but all of a sudden they have something pop up in their primary care where their doctor is going to be out and they need patients to be seen. And that's the key here is to make sure that the patients are being seen and taken care of and not migrating towards other clinics and other hospitals. So the focus here is helping out with the here and now, taking care of the current patient load.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, do you guys do typical physician recruitment or just more on the temporary placement side to fill in for PTO or somebody sick?
Yeah. So TH Med, our overall parent company, handles all staffing for all facets, whether it's permanent search, whether it's a locum tenens. We even get into executive search and allied staffing. So if we're not able to help them out with a locum tenens, we refer them on to our sister company called Fidelis Partners.
Gotcha. Could you provide some context just around healthcare staffing as a whole, what that really looks like and what those guys, how I guess a THR or a Baylor goes about staffing their health system?
Certainly. A lot of the times they have a physician recruiter and possibly multiple physician recruiters at their corporate facility, helping out with their permanent search needs. A lot of the times they have a primary care physician recruiter, and then they have the subspecialty physician recruiter. And a lot of the times those physician recruiters are handling the locum tenens business. So oftentimes those administrators will push down on those physician recruiters to make sure that all of their clinics and their providers in the hospitals have a fully staffed network of physicians. And so these major corporate facilities have those capabilities versus a rural community health setting where they don't have these physician recruiters. Usually that is relied upon by the CEO or the administrator.
Okay. And in these rural settings, they typically come to people like yourself to fill their staffing needs, correct?
Yes, they sure do.
Okay. I mean, you've talked a lot about primary care and physician. There's a lot of talk and news about the physician shortage here in the next coming years. And currently, I mean, from your perspective, is that a residency issue? Not enough students coming in? I've also heard that a medical school issue, or is it a residency issue, or what do you see is what's causing the physician shortage, especially within primary care?
Okay, yeah, hey Matt, it's Stephen. I wanted to chime in here.
Yeah, perfect.
On this particular topic. So we've kind of got a couple different scenarios here. We've got a physician shortage. And in addition to that, we have physician burnout, right? So we've got two components that are kind of contributing to what it is that we do here at MediStar. Now, currently, there's roughly 95,000 doctors. We are 95,000 physicians short of where...
Today we are.
That's correct. The current shortage that we have is roughly 95,000 physicians. Now, as the population begins to age, and obviously people are healthier these days, they're continuing to live longer lives. And by the year 2032, it's projected that we will have a physician shortage of roughly 125,000 physicians. Now, to compound this issue, it's even more of an epidemic because you have physicians who are aging, and they're approaching their mid to late 60s, and by that year, roughly 2030, 2032, half of the physicians that are practicing are going to be at or over the age of 65, which means there's going to be a significant shortage of physicians that are going to be practicing in that time. Because what we have is we have a population that continues to grow, and it will be roughly 10% by that year 2030, 10% larger than it is now. And we have fewer and fewer physicians coming into practice, that the gap is just continuing to widen as time goes by.
Yeah, I mean that makes total sense. How does that affect a patient? Does that just lead to higher costs? Does that directly affect patient outcomes? What have you seen? Like, how does that affect you and I as consumers of healthcare?
So it's a great question. I think the effects can be felt across a myriad of topics. I believe that the patients, obviously, that increases the wait times when there's a physician shortage. That puts the burden of seeing additional patients on physician. That kind of touches with my earlier point on the physician burnout piece. The reimbursements are likely going to be decreased as well. And that just the overall quality of the patient care is going to be in a steady decline, because there's so many patients for one physician to see. The errors are going to be compounded as time goes by.
Yeah, that makes sense. And some interesting points there. We'll get to burnout here in a second. I'm curious how does that affect reimbursements? Maybe I'm misunderstanding it or not kind of connecting one of the dots, but I'd be interested to hear your perspective directly on the reimbursement side of things.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah, a couple different reasons behind that. From a clinical standpoint, likely with the physician shortage, there's going to be, or we're seeing it currently, an increase in utilizing nurse practitioners and PAs in the absence of physicians, you know, primarily mm-hmm. due to the lack of physicians. And from a reimbursement standpoint, when you bring a mid-level provider or a nurse practitioner or a PA in to perform the same procedures per se that a physician would perform, they're reimbursed at a lower rate.
I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So that would ultimately affect the practice because they would be utilizing nurse practitioners in the capacity of a physician.
Gotcha.
As well, I'd like to jump in here too.
Yeah, go for it.
That also we're moving towards a fee for value. And so mm-hmm. when we're doing these reimbursements with the Affordable Care Act, what Stephen was talking about with the number of increase in population and the level of doctors staying flat, that the demand for doctors is so high now that the time spent with the doctor is typically about 15 minutes. And during those 15 minutes, you have those patients being seen, and to get reimbursed for those specific patients, they have to be treated and taken care of. And if they were to ever come back within those 30 days, that doctor doesn't get the full reimbursement based on the Affordable Care Act. And so okay. it's a model of value of the patient and taking care of the patient immediately upon first contact.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm not sure if you guys have heard of direct primary care and more of a subscription model that totally gets away from, call it insurance and billing and all of that, and allows me as a member to pay a set fee each month for access to primary care and urgent care, call it services.
Sure.
Is that something you guys are seeing and staffing for, or is it predominantly your traditional primary care roles?
We certainly are seeing that. We're certainly not. That's something in terms of locum tenens. It's rare that we're helping that particular type of primary care.
Gotcha.
Just because it's a cash-based system to where most likely you're hitting a part of the population that's probably in a higher income bracket that's able to pay, say, $2,000 per patient a year to have those type of services. So typically, those particular providers are getting away from the payers and more of a cash-based system. So it is definitely new. It's, well, you know, relatively within the past 5 years that that's really come about. It's not a large majority of what we're seeing in primary care, but it certainly has taken effect in terms of urban areas.
That makes sense. Is there anything else you guys wanted to hit on in with regards to physician shortage before we get into more the burnout side of things?
You know what, some of the areas that are really hit hardest by this primary care is the rural and inner city residents, often the elderly, people with mental illness or even addiction, and those are that are without health coverage. Those are some of the people that are hit the hardest, because the more often that the people that might be out in the rural areas, it's going to be harder for them to travel in and see their primary care physician just because they can't schedule their, and the hospitals are now closing down that are in these smaller cities. These critical access hospitals and their clinics that go with it are closing down because of these of staffing shortages. There, you can go online and see multiple stories about elderly physicians that can't retire because there's no new physicians that are coming out and taking care of these society these cities. And so, a lot of times, we're seeing a move towards the primary care model in urban settings where there can be more specialty care.
Interesting. I mean, what can be done in a situation like that? Call it a rural town or inner city. Like, I mean, are there any, is there a bright spot? Are there solutions being presented that just haven't been rolled out on a large scale? Or what are you guys seeing there?
Yeah, it's Stephen again. I did want to chime in on that. You brought up a great question, and I'll tell you that is a problem that is in front of us. There isn't a solution right now, and it's unfortunate that. I'm very passionate about this, and in that it's the primary care field that is the most neglected. It is where. In 10 or 15 years' time, we are going to see the biggest effect of the physician shortage is going to be on the primary care side of the business. Now, that is primarily because the new physicians, everything is specialized now, right? We're all very aware that if you need to have a specific procedure done, there's a physician for that, and there's a physician, a specific physician to prep you for that procedure, and a hand physician, and a, you know, and an elbow physician. It's somebody for your right hand, somebody for your left hand, right?
And
you know, the reason that people are and physician new physicians are coming into this is there's more money in that side of the business.
Yeah, they
you know, they're compensated better, and therefore primary care is just a neglected field. So that's where we are going to see the biggest long-term effect is in the shortage of primary care physicians. Is there a solution to this? I think you could plainly say, sure. The only solution that we would see is to compensate the primary care physicians the same as you would the specialty physicians. Unfortunately, that's not an option right now. So it's something that all the healthcare executives are very well aware of. The physicians themselves are aware of this growing epidemic, if you will. And something certainly needs to be done to render the situation sooner rather than later.
Is that purely like a, I guess, a financial issue of there's just not enough patients to sustain paying somebody $200,000 to be a primary care in the middle of nowhere. Where's kind of the disconnect if staffing shortage is causing all these small town hospitals to close? Is it just that there's simply not enough patients in a consolidated area to support it?
Yeah, Dennis here again. One of the things that we see is the high student loan debt that induces these medical students to go into specialty care. So, you know, I know we've talked about this, but currently about 36% of doctors provide primary care, which that includes pediatrics, internists, and OB-GYNs. But back to your question, though, when they have $400,000 to $500,000 in student loan debt, these medical students are now getting into the specialty care that's going to help pay for these high medical student loans. And
they kind of have to. And
some of these healthcare systems and smaller healthcare systems, the rural systems, they're advocating for student loan debt repayment. In other words, the healthcare systems taking care of these physicians' student loan debt. And that's something that I would like to see promoted and move forward. You're going to see, I think, more and more people getting help in rural areas by that happening.
Yeah, that would be awesome to see. I mean, that's not a legislative issue. I mean, that's the actual health system paying for that, correct? That's like almost an employee benefit for those individuals that elect to go to Glenrose or whatever small town.
And furthermore, on that topic, there's low Medicaid reimbursements for primary care doctors, and typically that drives doctors away from low-income areas and also drives them away from primary care. So when we're talking about, you know, these specialized doctors, they're more in the urban setting, and they're, you know, where the capacity of patient load can be maximized, and you don't see that in a rural setting.
Yeah, that makes total sense. We are fortunate to have tons of options here in DFW. I mean, you talked about it a lot in the beginning, physician burnout. You sent over some numbers that threw out as high as 45% of physicians surveyed reported feeling the effects of burnout. Can you explain that a little further and how that affects care across the board?
Yeah, of course. That was a rather interesting number that I had sent over to you initially, and I was quite shocked as well when I'd read the study that of the 15,000 physicians that were surveyed, 45% of them had reported feeling the effects of burnout. And there's been an interesting shift with this new generation of physician coming into the workplace, that the number one career goal is now work-life balance over compensation, right? So in the past, compensation was the number one motivator, and now that work-life balance has become, it's surpassed compensation as being the number one goal in this particular career. Now, with what we do here at MediStar, with providing locum tenens for coverage, what that enables clinicians to do is take control of their own schedule, right? And it frees up the hours that the full-time providers have to put the freedom back in their lives. And and of course, allow them the opportunity to rediscover their passion, if you will, for practicing medicine. And the solution that we provide is exactly what it is that this industry needs to help sustain the growth of physicians and further encourage new physicians to come into the practice. We've seen healthcare, the executives and the administrators are now starting to understand. Primarily, they've heard the physicians complaining enough. I need a break. I'm seeing too many patients.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to trickle down throughout the health system. And it's starting to trickle down from a financial standpoint. When you have practices, hospitals that have employed physicians that no longer want to work there because they are just being worked to the end, have no relief whatsoever. These healthcare executives, the administrators, are now starting to understand the value of utilizing locum tenens so they can retain their current staff. And that's what we've seen. That's what I've seen over the last, 15 years of working in this industry, is there is a tremendous growth in locum tenens. And this is why.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like your sales pitch to the provider of why they should consider it. I mean, I'm curious, if these guys and girls are so burned out, like how many patients are they typically seeing? I mean, I've heard numbers for primary care physicians kind of across the board being 4,000 to 5,000, 6,000, and that in the model for direct primary care being under 1,000. But like, I mean, can you provide some context of what that burnout looks like, how many patients a typical physician is seeing on a daily basis for that, call it 10 minutes?
Sure, of course. Again, it primarily comes back to what specialty in mm-hmm. particular. If we're talking about specifically primary care, that being pediatrics, family practice, internal medicine, that type of setting, a typical, 8-hour average is going to be anywhere from 20 to 30 patients seen in a standard clinic. Now, when you branch out further into urgent care, per se, we have physicians and nurse practitioners and PAs that are seeing upwards of, in some cases, close to 50 patients per day.
Yeah.
And that is a significant number of patients to see in an 8-hour day.
Yeah, that is quite a few people.
And what that creates is it creates more room for error and mistakes. As the patient count, the number of physicians decreases, and the number of patients that need to be seen increases, well, somebody has to see these patients. Mm-hmm. And that just means you're cramming more patients into a shorter period of time. And, it's going to create additional errors.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You guys have a unique perspective and some insights within healthcare. I'd be interested to hear what trends you guys are seeing that do excite you outside of the ones that call it scare you as far as shortages and burnout. But are you guys seeing anything super cool happening within healthcare that we should see here in the next couple of years?
Well, I know that we're, entering an era where we need more providers, period. That mm-hmm. With that, we're seeing more an increase in nurse practitioners and physician assistants to help out with this growing gap in coverage for primary care. So with that, we also have, we're adding more residency programs, to which we hope that increases the number of physicians that will be entering into that specific state. And then with that also, we're going to have more providers that are going to be able to have more licenses. In other words, having multiple state licenses that can often drive to different locations throughout the U.S. and take care of these particular needs as they grow.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think this is John Martin, the CEO of TH Med, and I think one of the most exciting stories I've seen recently is NYU's medical school is now free one of the founders of Home Depot put together a $550 million endowment so that he could get the best and brightest to go to medical school, not come out with so much debt that it was going to take you 10 years. So, you know, you go through medical school, there's 4 years, then you have your residency, and then you have your specialty training. And so you could be 33, 34 years old before you start making dime one and you're $500,000-$600,000 in debt. You know, super successful people putting together that kind of endowment to incentivize our best and brightest to go back to medical school to be doctors, I think is one of the most exciting stories I've seen in years.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, we hit on the main topics I wanted to discuss with physician shortage, burnout, what you guys are doing. A question I like to ask all my guests, how do you guys kind of stay healthy given your busy schedules? You can all three answer if you'd like, not at once.
I go to a gym every day during lunch. It is my 1 hour and I don't talk to anyone. I'm very focused, and it is, instead of a psychiatrist, I pay $100 a month to go to the psycho gym to keep my mind healthy and my body healthy.
I like it.
I'll double down on that. My only time is at 5 a.m. And so I have kids, and so it helps relieve the stress and keeps me healthy. I come in to the office ready to go, obviously with caffeine in hand. But yes, that's my go time.
Awesome. I've got two more, so almost done here. You guys are in the recruitment business. I mean, what is your favorite interview question to ask physicians? I don't know if you guys are directly interviewing them, but I'm sure you've done hundreds, thousands of interviews over the years. So what's your favorite interview question?
When we do references, my favorite reference question is, would you let Dr. Martin be the physician for one of your family members? I think that is the ultimate measurement of whether or not we feel good about putting that doctor out on assignment.
I bet you get some good answers.
And I often ask them, why do you want to be in this field? I know that's very simplistic, and I know that's very generic, but it often entertains and opens up the scope to what that person knows about our field. And if they have any knowledge to our industry and knowing these kind of facts and going forward for the next 10 to 15 years, that's going to dictate how this industry is going to be such a demand over the next 15 to 20 to 30 years.
Interesting. We can wrap up with this one. What is something you guys believe in that few others do? I always kind of wrap up with this one, so we'll end it here.
Well, company believes in centered on finding people who care. And we think that that's an external message as well as an internal message. Mm-hmm. We do want to provide great care for the patients. But internally, we do want to find people that care because that empathy goes a long way. We are in a business where if you just do the math, and to Stephen's earlier point, if someone's doing 40 encounters a day, I can go home feeling good about why I do this. If it hadn't been for my doctor in that rural community, 40 people would not have received health care that day. And I think that type of a big heart is what's helped us be a fastest growing business in Dallas-Fort Worth for the last 10 years.
That's awesome. Anybody else want to answer it? Or are we going to finish it on that?
Yes. And also, I think what differentiates MediStar and TH Med in general is the people that we have in here. We're very team oriented. We have what's called a three desk system between the business development, the account managers, and the recruiters. And okay. We literally have somebody, an account manager, that is on that specific need and helping that particular healthcare system find their needs.
That's a cool setup. I've heard different variations of that, but I like the three-team setup. Perfect. Well, really appreciate you guys coming on. That was the first time I've ever done it with more than one guest. I think it was a success, so I appreciate it. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you for the invitation. It was fun.
Thank you, Matt. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone. It's Matt. Thanks again for tuning in to Healthy Conversations. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating, or write a quick review. If you really loved it, share the episode on social media. It really helps our iTunes ranking. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.